That's one I would recommend, and I remember the title of the other one I've got at home. It says lots shorter, smaller, even just with symbolic logic. This covers more things than symbolic logic. So it's probably better guide for you all around.
Okay.
Huh?
Oh, he deals with quantification theory, analogy, and probability, inference, science, and hypothesis, causal connections, and induction, and so forth. Whereas symbolic logic is mostly dealing with deduction. He's into some more things that we won't be able to have time to do here. So if you want to do more reading on the subject of logic, I'd recommend getting into it some more. I don't know if Fred here today. The name of the book is Introduction to Logic by Irving M. Kopi, C-O-P-I. I think it's probably available at the UW Library or various places. Mike Beaton just got a copy of it, too. You might ask him where he got his. But, Fred, did you pick this up at a...
Yeah, you can
get it available at the UW Bookstore or places like that right now?
There's a highlight here for the
Okay. I guess that's the Highline...
Bookstore there.
Right. Yeah, Highland Community College Bookstore. It's copyrighted 1978, so it's pretty recent book. Okay, but the logic, these principles of logic aren't going to change that much from here, so if you get an older book, don't worry about it. Okay, so I would recommend if you want to get a hold of a copy of that to do more reading and study and review some of these things, that would be real good for you. Now, we're just about to the end of what we're going to be doing here. We're just sneaking up on all the rules of inference. I hope we get to some of those today. And I think what we'll do is today I'll get as far as I can here, and then I'm going to give you some exercises not to do as homework, but to do next Wednesday when you gather here. And so you'll do them in class. And maybe you can help one another. And I think, Fred, you're going to be gone next Wednesday too, aren't you?
Yeah.
Okay. I think if Mark doesn't mind here, we'll kind of put him as in charge of the monitor here, whatever you want to call him. And I'll give him some copies of some exercises and handouts that everybody can all work on together during class. And then that way I'll be able to still teach my idea class and staying out of there that long. And then Thursday, I'll be back and we'll finish up with what else we have to do, and we'll go over the questions that you had, and we'll work proofs on the board. And we'll do them all step by step together so you can see what we're doing and get more familiar with this. So there won't be any homework assignment per se, just use your notes and so forth when you get here in class and work on these things together. And I'll give Mark a sheet with all the proofs done and so forth so that he can put them on the board. And, you know, just kind of take it as it comes. You know, if you're all stumped on one, you know, maybe one of you can just get up and put it on the board and show them how to work it out. And kind of, you know, help one another here. So... probably not until after break, because I want to have enough time to work with you on this. So we'll probably let you know more about that next week, just depending on how far we've covered. And the way I'm thinking now is that the quiz will be an open book quiz, an open note quiz. In other words, you'll have all your stuff there, and I'll be giving you some things to do to apply it. And that's why I want to give you some work and exercise with the class here and make sure everybody knows how to work them out and so forth. So we'll give you more details on that. Okay. These things are supposed to make logic problems easy, not difficult. Huh? I want to get you to a point where you're all familiar with it. I don't want this to be a big mystery. Okay. Yesterday we were talking. We're discussing testing arguments for validity using truth table method. And yesterday, I think the last one we put on the board was the disjunctive syllogism, and we tested that out. And remember what determines a valid argument or invalid argument. What you're doing is looking at all the possible combinations of truth values. And when you make your truth table, if you can find any place where the premises are both true but the conclusion is false, then the argument is not valid. But on the other hand, if there's no place where the premises are true and the conclusion is false, in other words, every time you have both premises true, you always have the conclusion true, that's a valid argument. That means that whenever you present this argument to somebody, if both of your premises are true, your conclusion is guaranteed to be true. It can't be anything else but true. And so you've got a valid argument. Anytime those premises are true, the conclusion is true. But if you can find a place where you have both true premises and the argument and the conclusion is false, then you know your argument's shaky. It won't really necessarily hold up. And it's not a valid argument. Now, your conclusion still might be true, but it won't be because the argument's valid. It might be because you just happen to make a lucky mistake or something. But the argument can't be asserted to be valid. All right. Let's try another another argument here. P horseshoe Q. P, therefore, Q. Anybody want to guess as to whether this argument is valid or not before we put it to the truth table test? Just out of an intuition. Maybe you want to guess, but you don't want to tell everybody what you guessed. Okay. Let's find out. All we do is set up our truth table, and by convention we set it up this way. Okay. Now, P horseshoe Q is just that normal truth function. It's true in this instance. It's going to be false here. It's going to be true in both these cases. Okay. Now, in this case, our premises are, this is a premise of our argument, and this is one of the premises, and this is the conclusion. Okay, now what we do is we go down our truth column and find all the places where both the premises are true. So, in this first line, we've got both premises true. Now, we look at our conclusion, and it's also true. So far, so good. So far, it's a valid argument. We've got to see if we can find any place where both of the premises are true, but the conclusion is false. So, we look down here, well, in this case, both of the premises are not true. In this case, they're both not true. In this case, they're both not true. So all the places where we can find in this column, this is the only place where both the premises are true, the conclusion is also true. So from this, we know that whenever we have an argument like this, if both of our premises are true, the conclusion is also going to be true. It's a valid argument. This particular argument has a name. It's called modus ponens. Don't ask me why. That's just what it's called. Okay. And these are terms that you'll get familiar with a little bit. This turns out to be one of the rules of inference also, as you'll see, but we'll get to those in a little bit. Okay, so modus ponens. Notice that, again, there's no place where the premises are both true and the conclusion is false, so we have a valid argument. Now, another common valid argument is what's called the hypothetical syllogism. Look at that one. Hypothetical syllogism. An example of a hypothetical syllogism would be this. If Calvinism is true, then man is predestined. I'm just going to shorten this. What I mean is predestined to be saved or lost. And can't do anything about it, so forth. But I won't qualify at all now. Then our next premise, if man is predestined, then man has no free will. Okay, you might debate all this stuff. I didn't think out this totally theologically. I'm just trying to get it. It doesn't really matter what I say here, as long as I make an argument for them. Okay. Now the conclusion that we draw from this is that if Calvinism is true, then man has no free will. I think you can intuitively see this is a valid argument, but regardless of whether or not this detailed statement are true. But you're starting out, if Calvinism is true, then man is predestined. Then you take this and make this the beginning of your next conditional statement. If man is predestined, then man has no free will. And the conclusion is taking these two together. If Calvinism is true, then man has no free will. This is called the hypothetical syllogism. And we would symbolize this way. Let's say P represents this first statement, and then let's let Q represent this statement. And then, of course, Q is going to appear down here again. And then this R, we'll have to use another symbol now because this is a different statement. And then this is R again, and this is Q. So our argument boils down this way. P horseshoe Q, if P, then Q. And then Q horseshoe R is our next premise. Q, if Q, then R. And the conclusion is, if P, then R. P horseshoe R. That's the hypothetical syllogism. Okay? So that's just symbolizing this particular argument. Okay, now, how do we verify this? How are we going to establish it by a truth table. Everybody have this down before I read it. P horseshoe Q, Q horseshoe R, therefore P horseshoe R. That's all you really need for testing it out. Okay, let's we have to put a bigger truth table on here now because we've got three variables, P, Q, and R. And so, in order to get all the combinations of three variables, we're going to need, as it turns out, eight rows instead of four. The way you figure this up is it's 2 to the n. If you've got n is the number of variables, then the number of rows will be 2 to the n of rows needed. So if we only have one variable, we just need two rows. Either P is true or it's not true. See? If we've got two variables, P and Q, we've already seen we needed four rows to get all the combinations. And if in this case, 3 is 2 to the third, that's 8 rows. You see what I mean? We're just trying to get all the different combinations of three things taken this way, so that each can have either true or false value. So in this case, we'll put 4 trues, 4 falses. And we'll put true, true, false, false, true, true, false, false. Then in this last row, we'll put true, false. So you just alternate in different terms. The first case, you go 4 in a row, then 2, then 1, and alternate. Okay, that works out to give you all the different possible combinations of these truth values. Fortunately, you're not going to have to worry about this too much. I'm going to show you an easier way around all this. But in the meantime, that's fun here. Okay, our argument was P horseshoe Q, Q horseshoe R, therefore P. Okay, so in order to work this out, we're going to have to put P horseshoe Q as one of our premises, Q horseshoe R, and P horseshoe R. Okay, and this was a premise, this was a premise, and this was a conclusion. Okay, now we consider all of these variables. P horseshoe Q, so we're going to take these two columns together. If P, then Q. Okay, that's going to work out to be true in this case. It's going to be true in this case, since both are true. If this is true and this is false, it's going to be false. This is true and this is false, that's going to be false. And in all the other instances, since this is false in every case, this is going to end up true in every case. The condition was true from our rule. So just applying our truth table rule of defining this to these two columns. Okay, now we've got Q horseshoe R. We're going to do the same thing with these two columns. Okay, that's going to be true in that case. It's going to be false here. It's going to be true here. It'll be true here. It'll be true here. It's going to be false there. See, the only place it's false is when the first part of the statement is true, the second is false. Okay, and it's going to be true here and true here. Okay, now we've got P horseshoe R. It's that. That's these two columns, P and R. Okay, in the first place, it's going to be true. Here, it's going to be false. Here, it's going to be true. Here, it's going to be false. Here, it's going to be true. It'll be true all the way down to the column. This is false. Okay, now, remember how we just test validity. What we need to do is see if we're going to look at our two premise columns, and wherever our two premise columns are both true, then if the argument's valid, the conclusion's also going to be true in every case. If we find a case where that, well, we got trues in both of these columns and a false here, then the argument's invalid. Okay, the only place where we got places where we have true in both columns are here, and there it's true. Okay, we follow it on down. Here's the next place where this is the case. Notice. Yeah, let's see, I got a circle wrong here. Be sure you use lined paper that you get your lines even. That's supposed to be circled to this. Okay? So this went down. Okay. I thought I just discredited this argument here. Okay, and here and here. So it's a valid argument. So be sure when you're doing this that if you have lines, you would get these things like that. Okay, so in every case where both of our premises are true, our conclusion is also true. So we got four ways that can happen. It's always true in every case. We can't find a place where you got both true premises and a false conclusion. So it is a valid argument. Okay, now you can see how cumbersome this thing might get if you had, let's say, five variables.
Yeah.
How many rows would you need if you had an argument that had five different variables in it?
32.
Yeah.
2 to the n. 32. If you had 20 variables, you'd forget about it.
Okay. So this truth table method is convenient for small arguments, but we're going to show you ways to get around those using truth tables for bigger arguments. Yes. Right. If all you have to do is find one place. Let's suppose I had, even if I had seven places where it was true, and I found one place where it wasn't, the argument's still invalid, because that means that you can never be sure that your argument holds. Now, it may be, you know, you can use an invalid argument, still come up with a true conclusion if you happen to get the right, you know, part of it there with the sets of truth values that you have. But you can never be sure that just because your premises are true, your conclusion is going to be true if it breaks down in any one place. So that's all, you know, in order to be a valid argument, it's got to hold true in every case. Every place where your premises are true, then your conclusion is also going to be true. Now, we're not really interested, as far as validity is concerned, in cases where one of our premises is false. Because if one of your premises is false, you can expect your conclusion to be false. You know, even though you might, by lucky chance, come up with a true conclusion, even though your premises are false. That's not what the logician is interested in. He's interested in being able to test an argument, find out if it's really valid, and if it's going to be true in every case.
Okay.
So, in general, then, these truth tables do get rather cumbersome after a while. And as more arguments are considered, larger truth tables are needed. For example, an argument. But another valid argument, we're not going to take the time to put this on the board, although you're certainly welcome to do this on your own if you'd like. I think it'd be fun to do. P horseshoe Q conjoined with R horseshoe S, and then P is a disjunction of R, therefore Q or S. This argument is a valid argument. It's called the constructive dilemma. And maybe I'll just leave it up to you if you've got the time.
How many variables, how many rows are you going to need in your truth table to verify that?
16,
right, because you've got four different variables,
P, Q, R, and S. So you're going to need 16 rows. And the way you'll do that is you'll put 8 truths and 8 falses, and then 4 truths and 4 falses, and 4 truths and 4 falses, and then 2 and 2 and 2 and 2, and then you'll alternate, and you'll have all your columns. And then fit all the combinations together and do exactly what we did with that. So I think it'd be fun for you to do that just to verify that this does work. And don't make any mistakes or you'll really frustrate yourself. Okay, but that turns out to be true also. There's other ways to prove these too. We're going to get to it a little bit more smooth and quicker. Okay, now, earlier that the fallacy of affirming the consequent, we talked about this yesterday, is superficially similar to this modus ponens that we talked about today. In other words, affirming the consequent, it was the fallacy of P horseshoe Q, and then Q, therefore P. We found out that was not valid. But P horseshoe Q, P, therefore Q, is valid. This is modus ponens. And so there's a superficial similarity here, and the only thing is that you reverse these two. And it only works one way. And you can't guarantee it the other way. So this is what we call the formal fallacy, and we call it the fallacy of affirming the consequent. There's a similar one that there's another fallacy that has a special name that's somewhat similar to this, except it works on the negative end. That I'll just discuss in a moment here, and that's this. P horseshoe Q, not P, therefore not Q. Now this also is a fallacy, and for the same basic reason that this other one, affirming the consequent, is. This is called the fallacy of denying the antecedent. So you can make a mistake either way, affirming the consequent or denying the antecedent. And the reason it's a fallacy can be seen from the truth table. P, Q, not P, not Q. We line these up. We've got true, true, false, false. True, false, true, false. Okay, not P, then it's going to be false, false, true, true. And not Q is going to be false, true, false, true. Okay, now in this case, I'll get the P horseshoe Q here. Okay, P horseshoe Q is going to be true, false, true, true. Okay. Now, in this case, this is a premise. and not P is a premise, and not Q is a conclusion. Okay? So our, both our premises are true. We've got to find the places where both premises are true. Okay? One's false and one's false. Both false there. Both true here. Okay? Okay, so in this case, we've got two true premises and a false conclusion, which makes the argument invalid, even though here they're all true. Now, the only way that in this case, if everything was like this, we'd be all right. But we've got this one here to worry about, and that makes the thing an invalid argument. So we did find a place where we had true premises and a false conclusion in our truth table. And so remember that to make it invalid, you only have to have one place where this doesn't work. Because in this instance, with these given sets of truth values, we can come up with a false conclusion with true premises, and the argument, therefore, is invalid. Okay. Now, that, however, is superficially similar to another argument. I think I'll just leave this truth table on the board here, save myself some work. There's a valid argument called modus tollens that looks like this. P horseshoe Q, not Q, therefore not P. You see, and the difference is these two terms are reversed. This turns out to be a valid argument. And we can do that with the same truth table we had here. Only in this case, we're going to have to switch these terms around. In this case, we have P horseshoe Q as a premise, and not Q as a premise, and P as a conclusion. Now, if you'll look, we find both all the cases where both of these are true, and that's, you know, there's only one. And in that case, the conclusion is also true, and so this is a valid argument. We could not find any place where both the premises were true and the conclusion false. So modus tollens is a valid argument. But this fallacy of denying the antecedent, which is looking somewhat similar, except you just reverse the terms, is an invalid argument. Okay. Now, just a couple of comments on statement forms. Yesterday we talked about argument forms, and what we found was that an argument form was something like this, using variables for the different terms that represent real statements. Now, the same is true of statement form. We really haven't used that term, but actually P horseshoe Q is part of an argument form, but it's also in itself a statement form. In other words, it's making a statement. We don't know what the statement is, but it's the form of a statement. So a statement form is just a sequence of symbols such that when statements are substituted for the symbols, the result is a statement. Nothing really profound about it. It's just the basic backbone form of a statement. Now, things like P horseshoe Q and VQ and P dot Q and not P and so forth are all statement forms, and they all are using symbols to describe a statement. Now, we defined a specific argument form yesterday as an argument in which every symbol represents a simple statement. The same is true of a statement form. A specific statement form is a statement form in which every single symbol represents a simple statement, not a compound statement. So you don't get into the confusion of compound statements being involved. So when you see the term specific statement form, it means that every symbol in that statement represents, that form represents a specific simple statement, not a compound statement. Not just by way of definition. Now, it's interesting that when you start to look at statement forms, there are some statements that are always true, regardless of what truth values you put in them. And there are some statements that are always false. For example, consider the statement, either Lincoln was assassinated or else he wasn't assassinated. Okay, that statement is always going to be true. Either he was or he wasn't. You don't get partly assassinated or, you know, hypothetically assassinated or something. You're either assassinated or you're not. And that will always be a true statement. So that statement might be represented by L or not L. Lincoln was assassinated or Lincoln was not assassinated. Now, that statement's always going to be true. There's no way you can make it false. And you can see that from a truth table. For example, if we use a generalized form of that, using our P's and Q's again, that statement would translate into the general form P or not P. Okay, let's test P or not P as a truth table. Now, our truth table has only one variable here, so we've got a nice truth table with only two columns, true or false. Okay. Not P is going to be then either false or true. Okay. Now, P or not P, remember your disjunctive function, it's true if either one is true. In this case, this one's true, so that makes the whole statement true. In this case, this one's true, that makes the whole statement true.
So there's only two ways that T or not T can come out, and both of them are true. In other words, the statement T or not T is always going to be true, no matter what assignment of truth or falsity I give to the variable itself. Because if you see, if P is true, then not P is going to be false. And the whole statement is going to be true. If P is false, then not P will be true, and that will make the disjunction true. So the statement is going to be true no matter, you know, the statement of the disjunction is going to be true no matter what the individual values are. Let's consider another statement. Washington was both assassinated and not assassinated. Okay? That statement is going to be false all the time. Because you can't be both assassinated and not assassinated. This is a contradiction. And we find, let's say, W and not W, which would generalize to P and not P. In our truth table for this, not P is false truth. P and not P, conjoining these two, is going to be false. The only way you can make a conjunction true is to have both parts true. That won't be the case in either case. So you result in a false statement every time. So no matter what values for P you choose, as far as truth value is concerned, you always end up with a false statement. P and not P is not going to be true. This is what's called a contradiction. Let me spell the word here. And there's a name for the first type of statement, P or not P. This is called a tautology, which means a tautology is a statement that's always true, and a contradiction is a statement that's always false. Okay, now this isn't the definition of a tautology, this just is an example of a tautology. There's many other kinds of statements that will always be true, and this is an example of a contradiction. But a tautology is defined as a statement that's always true. All of the assignments of truth values you can give to it will make the statement true, always. And a contradiction is a statement that's always false. And it doesn't make a bit of difference what statements you stick into that. No matter what statement you make, the statement is not going to be both. The statement and its contradiction are not going to be both true, you see. And that's the essential problem here that determines whether it's a contradiction or a tautology. Now, what about statements that may be true or false? Most of the statements we've dealt with so far have both truths and falses in their column. Those are called contingent statements. A contingent statement is a statement that may be true or may be false. So things like just P itself, all by itself, that's a contingent statement. P could either be true or false. Or P dot Q or P horseshoe Q, those are all contingent statements because in their truth tables, assigning different values to the truth values to them will result in either true or false in the truth table. It won't be all true or all false. It'll be contingent. Some will be true and some will be false. Now, not all statements can be so obviously classified into one of these groups. You know, it's easy to intuitively look at P and not P and see that that's a contradiction. But let's suppose we have a statement like this. P horseshoe Q. Horseshoe P, horseshoe P. Okay, you look at that, and I don't think any of you can obviously, intuitively say that that's a tautology, but it turns out to be. It is a tautology, and you can prove it with the truth table. So if you don't believe it, just figure the truth table out for it. But P, horseshoe Q, horseshoe P, the whole thing, horseshoe P, turns out to be always true. So there are other kinds of tautologies besides just these simple ones, in other words. Okay, so I just say that to introduce the terms tautologies and contradictions. Those are going to be helpful for some other things a little bit later on here. Any questions about tautology is a statement that's always true. It just means that that statement, when analyzed in terms of the truth table, will result in truths throughout its column. And so the contradiction is one that results in false all throughout the column. It's always false. Okay, there's one more logical function we want to define. Then we can start putting all these things together. And the logical function that we want to talk about is what's called material equivalence. The symbol that we use is an equal sign with three lines in it instead of two lines. And the truth table that defines this function is, to define this function, P is equivalent to Q, or materially equivalent to Q, we set up a truth table like this, just like we have with the other functions. And we define it as being true when both elements are true, false when they're different, and in other words, this is a statement that means that if P is equivalent to Q is a true statement when both P are true, P and Q are true, or both P and Q are false. In other words, if they're both false or if they're both true, then P is equivalent to Q. That's the logical definition here. The places where it's false is where they're different. In other words, it's essentially telling you that they're equivalent, that they have the same truth value. All we're really saying here is that P and Q have the same truth value. If P is true, then Q is true. If P is false, then Q is false. That's essentially what it's saying. In other words, this is another way of saying that these two statements imply each other. They imply each other. And it's really equivalent to the statement P horseshoe Q, excuse me, and Q horseshoe P. Oops. Said one thing and wrote another. Okay. That's really the same statement here. And if you figure the truth table for this, you'll see it comes out exactly the same as this. One way that you can say this is this symbol might be read if and only if. And one way to symbolize that is if of two F's means if and only if. P if and only if Q. So P is true if Q is true and only if Q is true. If Q is not true, then P is not going to be true. And if P is not true, then Q is not going to be true. In other words, there's going to be no set of values where these two will differ and the statement will be true. If these two differ in truth value, the statement is false. If these two agree in truth value, whether that be true or false, the statement is true. Another term that's used for this kind of a statement is called a biconditional. I think you can see why that might be true. Two conditions, they imply each other. Statements imply each other. If P then Q then, and if Q then P is what this is saying. So there's an equivalence between the two. So this is called a material equivalence, technically. And we read the symbol P if and only if Q. And that's the same as saying that P implies Q and Q implies P. They imply each other. All right. Now, we take this one slight step further and define what we call logical equivalence. On the basis of this, we're going to define logical equivalence. Two statements are said to be logically equivalent when their biconditional is a tautology. There's a mouthful for you. Okay, two statements, you can just write it down and we'll show you how it works. Two statements are logically equivalent. Now that's a little bit different than material equivalent, although it's defined on the basis of material equivalent. Two statements are logically equivalent when their biconditional is a tautology. When their biconditional is a tautology. In other words, and we've already seen that a tautology is a statement that's always true. And so if their biconditional is always true, what it's essentially saying is that these two statements have identical truth tables. That's what you'll see as we work it out. So, when statements are logically equivalent, their material equivalence is always true. The statement of their material equivalence is always going to be a true statement. That's what it means to say they're logically equivalent. Okay? So just put it down in terms of definition, and then we'll do some working with it so you can see how it works. What we're really saying, what all this boils down to, though, is that their truth tables are identical. If you make the truth table for this, you'll find that the truth table for this is exactly the same as the truth table for this. And so these two would be logically equivalent statements. In fact, if you were to take this statement and then draw this between these two and make that statement, you'd find that that statement is a tautology. It's always going to be true. Okay, let's just do that with another example for a moment to show you how this works. As it turns out, the statement not P or Q is equivalent if and only if not P and not Q is a tautology. meaning that these two statements are logically equivalent statements. Their truth tables are the same, because this equivalence function drawn between these two is going to result in a tautology, meaning that that equivalence is always going to be true, that these two statements are always going to be true. The reason we point this out is because later on we're going to find that if this is the case, we're going to be able to replace this statement with this statement in some sort of a complex proof. If we see something like this, we can take that out and put this in and not change any of the truth values or the function of the whole thing. And it may help simplify the argument and solve the problem. So what we're really doing is establishing the basis of something we're going to see a little bit later on, and that is replacing the principle, replacing, where you can take one expression out and stick another one in that's logically equivalent to it. And the reason you can do that is because the truth tables are identical. This one will function just exactly like the other expression functions in every respect. So they're just exactly the same as far as logical function is concerned. Now, let's see if this is true. What we're wanting to see now is that this, and if you think about this, what we're really saying is that the negation of the disjunction is true if and only if both statements are false. You see, remember our truth table of disjunction? We find that disjunction is true in every column except for the column in which both P and Q are false. That was the only column that made it false, because if one of them was true, then the whole statement is true. P or Q is true if either one of them is true. Now, what this statement is saying is that the negation of this, the only way I can make this P or Q false, is to have both P and Q false. In other words, have not P and not Q. That's the only way I can make it. So this does make intuitive sense if you think about it. But let's see if it makes any sense on the truth table. So fortunately, we still have only two variables here, P and Q. Okay. And let's put P or Q, and then not P or Q. Okay, and then let's just have not P, not Q, and then combination of those two, not P and not Q. Okay, and then our final statement is this equivalent, not P or Q, if and only if, not P and not Q. Okay, now we're going to have some fun here. P or Q is going to be true if they're both true, true if one's true if the other one's true, false if they're both false. Now, the negation of that, we just reverse everything here. The negation is going to be false, and true. That's easy. Not P will be false, true, going back to this column. And not Q is going to be false, true. Now, the conjunction of these two columns will be this one. And as you recall, conjunction is true only if both of them are true. So in this case, it's false, true. Okay. Now this statement, remember our equivalence function is defined as being true when both of them are false or both of them are true. So we're conjoining these two statements here. And in this case, they're both false, which is going to make this statement true. In this case, they're both false, which is going to make this statement true. In this case, they're both false to make this statement true. In this case, they're both false. This makes the statement true. And lo and behold, we have trues all the way through the columns, which means this is a tautology. This statement is going to be true no matter what values I assign for P and Q. It's always going to be true. Okay? Everybody follow that? And so what I really said is, and you can see that for yourself, look at these two columns. They're identical. In other words, this expression has the exact same truth table as this expression does. That means they're logically equivalent. Another way of saying logically equivalent is if you make a material equivalence between the two, the material equivalence is going to be a tautology. It will always be true. No set of values which will make that material equivalence false. And so this is what's defined as a logical equivalent. And the importance of this is that now whenever I find this expression in a complex expression, I can pull it out and stick this in instead, and I will not have changed anything logically because the truth tables are identical. Okay? Yes?
Okay.
Right, that's exactly it. If you want to know if two statements are logically equivalent, you set up a material equivalent function between them and follow that function according to a truth table, and you should result in a tautology. That statement will be a tautology. That's how we know that they're logically equivalent. You see, to say something are material equivalent does not necessarily mean they're logically equivalent. If they're logically equivalent, then that material equivalence will be a tautology.
always be a tautology. In other words, the statement's always going to be true. Because you can draw a material equivalent statement between two things, and it may be a lie. It may be false. In other words, its truth function may be false. What this is saying is that you draw that material equivalence between them, and any set of values that you choose for all of those variables will always result in a true statement. And that means that whenever I put this statement in, if I substitute this statement in, I'm not going to change anything in terms of the logical structure of that whole statement. So it's a very valuable notion because it's going to make things easier to work with a little bit later on. You may have a statement like this, and it might be easier to express it like this in relationship to another part of the statement, and it can really simplify things and solve things. It may go different ways depending on what your structure is.
Okay. You may not believe that yet, but I think you'll believe that after we get into some actual examples.
Okay. So, now this is true of other statements, too. There is another one that's somewhat akin to this statement. I'll just write it down underneath. I won't take time to prove this one. Can do it on your own. But another one is not P and Q is material equivalent or logically equivalent, because this is going to be a tautology. That statement is a tautology, which means, you see, after stating that this is a tautology, then I get a logical equivalence. Just putting this expression down just means I'm drawing a material equivalence between the two. I still don't know for sure if it's a tautology, but when I make this statement, I made a statement of logical equivalence here. But this is a tautology. And if you think about this also, the negation of the conjunction is true if you negate either one of the parts of them. You see, you can make a conjunction is only true, remember, when both parts were true. That's the only way to make a conjunction true. They both had to be true. And so you can make that false simply by negating one or the other of the two. That'll make the statement false. That's just what this is stating. Not P or not Q. If either P or Q is false, then this whole thing's going to be false. You can't make the conjunction true. But be that as it may, these two statements together are known as the De Morgan's theorem. Okay? After some guy named De Morgan first figured this out again. Okay? But these are both tautologies, and these two expressions are, this expression is logically equivalent to this, this is logically equivalent to this, since their material equivalence is always a tautology. Okay, one more piece of information here, and then we can start getting into these rules of inference and doing some more complex problems. And this last piece is simply to state this, it's just kind of a conclusion from everything we've seen here. There is a relationship between the concept of a tautology and what a valid argument is. And let's put it this way. To every valid argument, there is a corresponding conditional statement whose antecedent is the conjunction of the premises, whose consequent is the conclusion of the argument that will be a tautology. Let's just put it this way. Okay. Let's have an argument here. Let's take our... Okay, I'll repeat it again. Let me put something down on the board here first. I'll explain what I'm saying. You get so bogged down in words. Let's just take this argument, this modus ponens here. And I can make a single statement out of this argument by saying, if premise one and premise two are both true, then my conclusion is true. And I've made a conditional statement out of this whole argument. I've said, If premise A and premise B, then conclusion. So I guess I call these A and B, maybe. So if A is true and B is true, then Q is true. And so, or then my conclusion is true. And what I've really stated then is I've made a conditional statement. I've made a horseshoe statement out of this whole argument by conjoining the premises. In other words, the only way my argument is going to be true is if both premises are true, and then I'm inferring that the conclusion is true. So I can restate this by saying, if this and this, then this. That's what an argument is. It's a huge conditional statement. And so I'll read this again. Maybe it'll make a little bit more sense. To every argument like this, like modus ponens, there's a corresponding conditional statement, which is made up of the conjunction of the premises. That's going to be the antecedent of my conditional statement. And the consequent is the
conclusion of my argument. And that statement, that conditional statement that I make out of this, if it's a tautology, the argument is a valid argument. Okay, let's do what I've said here. I'm going to form a conditional statement out of this argument. And so, I'm going to take both of the premises and conjoin them. So I'm going to have P, horseshoe Q, and P. So I've conjoined my two premises together, and then I'm going to say that if both of these premises are true, then my conclusion is true. And so I can do that by just saying horseshoe Q. And so this expression here is just telling me what this argument is saying. My argument is saying is if this premise is true and this premise is true, then this conclusion is true. And logically, I can make a logical statement out of that, making a conditional statement, P horseshoe Q and P implied Q. Now, this may or may not be a valid argument. The only way I'm going to know whether this is a valid argument or not is to know whether this conditional statement is a tautology. You know, I could do it another way, like we did with the truth table. Or if I can prove that this is a tautology, meaning that this statement will always be true, what I really said then is that if this statement is always going to be true, then my conclusion is always going to follow from these premises, no matter what set of truth values I use, and this conditional statement is always the case, which means that whenever I have these premises, I can always be sure of this conclusion. So if this turns out in my truth table to be a tautology, then, again, I've got a proof of validity. So you can do that just by running the truth table on this expression here, P and Q, P horseshoe Q, and then P horseshoe Q conjoined with P, and I guess we don't need to put Q down again, but what we're going to have here is this. Well, I guess we better. We'll put it down for this for purpose. P horseshoe Q dot P, the whole thing, horseshoe Q. And if I end up with a tautology, if I end up with all truths in this column, then I'll know that this statement is always true, that this implication is always true. That means that whenever I have these premises, I'm always going to have this conclusion. That means my argument is always valid, no matter what set of values I put for P and Q. So we've got a few minutes here. I think we'll have time to do this. Okay, P horseshoe Q is going to be true and they're both true. It's going to be false here. It's going to be true in both these cases. Now, if I can join these two, P horseshoe Q and P. Okay, it's true in that case, since both are true. It's false here because one's true and one's false. It's false here because one's true and one's false. And it's false here because one's true and one's false. Okay, now I'm going to have if this, then this. So this is going to be the antecedent of a new horseshoe relation, namely this. Okay, so if this is true, then this is true. Okay, it's true in this case, they're both true. If this is false, then I don't need to worry about what this is. This statement's going to be true. If this is false, vice, same thing. See, because it's false in all these cases, by our definition of the horseshoe relation, we're going to end up with a tautology here. Truths all the way down the column. Meaning that this statement that I made here is always going to be a true statement. Meaning that if these two premises hold, then this conclusion follows, and that's always going to be true. So we have a valid argument. We haven't really done anything different here than what we did with the other truth table method, but it's convenient sometimes to think of this in terms of a huge statement of a conditional. Because every time you make an argument, you're making a gigantic conditional. Now, in some cases, you may have 10 premises, and what you'd have to do is conjoin all 10 premises and see if that conjunction is always going to result in a tautology when it's put into a horseshoe relation with your conclusion. Okay, so for every valid argument, making a conditional statement using all the premises, the conjunction of all the premises at the antecedent and the conclusion as the consequent, that statement will be a tautology if the argument is valid. It's always going to be true. Okay, now that brings us to the method of deduction and how we're going to put all this stuff together. Now, we run into problems when we start getting more than one variable, or more than, I'll say, three or four variables, because your truth tables get so awkward and it's easy to make mistakes and you're with all these columns and so forth. And so there are better ways to do it. There are quicker ways to do it. A more efficient means to establish validity of an argument, if it's a big argument, is to deduce the conclusion by a sequence of elementary arguments. In other words, we're going to break down this big argument into littler ones that we already know whether they're valid or not. In other words, if we can break the big argument down into littler ones that are all valid, then we can deduce the valid big argument. And let's just take one example of this. Let's suppose my argument is A, horseshoe B, B, horseshoe C, C, horseshoe D, not D, A or E, and the conclusion of the argument is E. Now, to look at that, you might wonder, how in the world can you, you know, if we've got five, there's easily five different statements, this turned out to be a valid argument. But you can see that it's not going to be very convenient to prove this with a truth table, because you're going to have 32 rows. You've got five variables, you're going to have 32 rows in your truth table. You can do it that way if you want to, but there's a quicker way, much quicker way. Because the above argument can be solved by a series of, as it turns out in this case, four elementary valid arguments. Let me just go through this once quickly here and give you something to think about. And then we're not going to have time to do this in your exercises yet. I'll be getting back to you on this on next Thursday. The exercises I'll give you have to do with truth table methods and so forth. But from step number one and step number two, we can imply, let's do it the way we normally do it. Step six, what I'm going to do is I'm going to take from A horseshoe B and B horseshoe C. Remember the hypothetical syllogism? From this, I can deduce A horseshoe C by hypothetical syllogism. The formal way to do this is to say from steps one and two and the hypothetical syllogism. So from this and this, I can deduce A horseshoe C from the hypothetical syllogism. Okay, then for my next step, I can say from this one, from six and three, I have A horseshoe C and C horseshoe D. From hypothetical syllogism, I can get A horseshoe D from that same rule. And so I go A horseshoe D, again, from these two steps, six and three, by the hypothetical syllogism. Okay? Then, from this step, seven, and from not D, remember A horseshoe D and not D is good old modus tollens, and from that I can conclude not A. So I'm going to put not A down here from step 7 and step 4 by modus tollens. Because step 7 says A horseshoe B, step 4 said not B. And from those two, I can deduce not A by modus tollens. It's a valid argument. See, these are all valid arguments, and so I'm just working down here to something simpler. Step 9, since I have not A, and look what I have up here, A or E. From A or E and not A, I have the disjunctive syllogism. And so from steps 5 and 8 and disjunctive syllogism, I can conclude what? E. And that's what I was trying to prove. So I proved this argument is valid by taking a step of 1, 2, 3, 4 valid arguments. And this is what really streamlines the method. See, you look at that argument and say, my, how am I ever going to even attack that? But you just start breaking it down like this, and through a series of valid arguments, looking at these steps, you can come up with a conclusion. And that's the kind of thing we're going to be doing next Thursday. So I'll have some things for you to do next Wednesday when you come in. I won't be here, but we'll have some exercises for you to do, and then Thursday we'll go through some more of this. I'll give you some rules of inference and give you a whole series of rules. I'm going to photocopy a list of the rules of inference for you so you can have it in your file. And there's 19 of them all together. But they really streamline this process, and you can appeal to these things and take a huge argument. And in fact, if you want to have some fun, it's not going to be real easy to do, but you can take that problem I gave you about the railroad men and all that, and you can reduce that to a series of things in symbolic logic and figure it out. And you'll find it'll work out real slick there. The hardest part is going to be making your statements. It's going to be translating your statements there into logical form. That's where the whole problem is. Once you get it written down like this, it'll be a snap. That's all for today. No assignment next time, except just to come ready to have some fun working exercises.
Fred, did you get my assignment?
Yeah. Yeah, I'll probably get them to Mark, you know, the day before or something in Greek. Hand them out.
Yeah, I'll go back over it and then have a chance to
probably, what we may want to do is not have it right when they get back, but, you know, if Don wants to start, then we can just take one, you know, time to... Oh, you would? Okay. Well, maybe we can do a shoot for the quiz on the first Thursday after we're back. That way I'll have Wednesday to do review, go through all kinds of things, and then I'll give them a kind of in-class test on Thursday. Yeah. So you can tell Don that he can start the week after. You know, I'll take the first week after break. And,
thanks, Mike.
Sure enough. Mark, this is how much I can hear you. This will be in the front
there. Yeah.
Yeah.
Give
20
minutes and do it together.
Yeah. But he'll tell you.
I'm going to use everything that's on the shelf if I was going to get it.